Hello again, ladies and gentlemen, Ghost Nobody here, ready to bring you chapter 147 of Radiance, my original Fallout fanfiction. As always, if you can like, share and subscribe to this wherever you can, and leave feedback at sites via fanfiction.net, archiveofourown.org, or even at my own website, ghostnobody.com. I always enjoy reading your comments and seeing what you're thinking. And, you know, if you've got any ideas, you're always free to leave them on my Discord or on these sites. And, you know, if I like the ideas, I might pick them up and use them. You never know. But if you do pop over to ghostnobody.com, why don't you check out Stormrider? You know, if big surly dragon-esque girls, orcs and elves, magical realms, and human mages are your sort of thing, check it out. You might enjoy it. And also, while you're there, why not pop over to the Ghostly Link section? Check out Mortis, my original novel, for sale on both Smashwords and on Amazon. Pick it up. Help support me and keep me doing what I love, bringing unlikely alien romance stories to you good people. So, without any further ado then, let's get on with the show, shall we? Oh, but first the usual legal disclaimer. I don't own Fallout or anything to do with it, that's all Bethesda. I just keep Crazy Tales happy. Let's get on with the show. Chapter 147, Cracked Mirror. As the Vertibird landed back at her home base, Dark Angel dropped down from the troop bay. She was met at the landing pad by a security team and a couple of scientists who were obviously very eager to get their hands on what she brought back along with her. "Excellent work, Dark Angel, as always. I knew I could count on you to get the job done," one of the scientists said. It was a man she knew as Dr. Phillips. He was a man in his late 50s with greying black hair and deep green eyes, but also a very pale complexion from spending most of his life underground. She held out the case to him and he took it from her eagerly, resisting the urge to open it there and then. Instead, after he took it, he and the science team scurried away back into their labs with a case in hand to begin their analysis. That's what one of the security team, a man even in his power armour Angel recognised as Major Hayden, stepped up before her. "Come along, I want to hear your report," he said, gesturing for her to follow him. And as he turned, the other members of the security team closed in around her on all sides. It was obvious they didn't still fully trust her yet, but given how different she was from any of them, she guessed it was kind of understandable. Major Hayden led them through to a briefing room, and after he gestured for Angel to hook a suit up to a machine in the front of the room that looked like a cross between a chair and a computer, with all the wires and bits looping around it, Angel moved over and sat down in the chair, hooking up various probes and leads to the ports on her suit, so that it could download the data. Not only moments after, an image popped up on a large display screen off to their left. It was a view of what she had seen while on the ground. "All right, Angel, standard SOPs. Talk us through the engagement and what you noticed," the Major said while tapping away at the computer. Angel talked them through what she had seen and heard at the facility. Well, every so often the Major paused the feed from time to time and asked her more in-depth questions about what she was seeing or hearing from the suit's sensors or cameras at that moment. She did her best to explain them all to her, and he seemed very satisfied by her answers. "Well, it definitely seems like the Brotherhood have ramped up their operations all over since the collaboration with the Free People and the Avians and now the Bloody Minutemen. They're getting bolder here all the time, and this here proves it. Plus, with the intel we're getting back from our spies within the organisation, and says they have all but locked down the region of Boston. If this spreads, it could be bloody catastrophic," he said. Major Hayden turned to look at Angel, who was still sat looking up at the feed from her suit, showing her hard work. She felt rather proud of what she had accomplished down there, and seeing it again only bolsters that sense of accomplishment. "All right, Angel, we have another mission for you. This one's kind of a fastball, so we're going to need to deploy you quickly. You're going to be in the field for a number of days, so grab ammo and gear and for a possible prolonged engagement," Major Hayden said. "What's the mission, sir?" she replied, and he nodded approvingly. "That's what I like about you, Angel. Always right to the point. No fuss, no mess. Wish I had 10 more just like you, despite what the other commanders bitch and moan about. All right, so listen up. We're sending you into Boston. There's a number of important targets here, but most of them are all series of Minutemen commanders, and we want you to take them out. Now, normally we'd send you right for their HQ and their general, But that place is extremely well fortified, and with all the Free Peoples running around down there, even you might have a problem given how effective these guys are in combat. We can't afford to lose you out there. So we're going to send you after some softer targets. No, don't mistake that for easy. These guys are going to be pretty heavily guarded. But if anyone can get to them, it's you. So I'm transferring a file to your suit's combat computer. Contains pictures of each of them along with their last known whereabouts and any intel we have. There's 8 of them in total. Each responsible for a region within the Boston arena and a region too. With them removed, it'll throw the Minutemen into high command into disarray. And it'll allow our guys some more breathing room to get their own missions done in the area. Might also throw some spanners into the works regarding to this alliance that they got going on down there. There's also a list of targets of opportunity as well, primarily Brotherhood commanders, but they're secondary only. Focus on the Minutemen first, he said as his fingers tapped away on the keyboard. When do I deploy? Angel asked him once again. The Major nodded approvingly. Right away. So head down to stores, grab the gear that's been prepped for you and meet us at the landing pad. Dismissed, the Major said. The Angel got to her feet and saluted before heading out of the room with a bubble of invisible excitement growing in her stomach. She was being finally set into the field for real. No more minor hit and runs or smash and grab ops. This was the big time. She was being upgraded to proper assassin level now. The Major had sent her to get the gear and was waiting at the stores. More magazines for her sniper rifle and her battle rifle, as well as a pack containing food and camping equipment for a prolonged time in the field. Angel signed for it all and swiftly geared up. She knew her first task on the ground would be plan out her route. This meant setting up a camp at a central point, and she really didn't want to be lugging all of her gear around with her when she headed to the combat sites. As she headed up to the landing pad, there was the Major and the signals team with him, who, as she approached, got a piece of equipment ready to inject new encryption codes into her comm system. With that done, Angel boarded the waiting vertibird and braced herself for the long flight to Boston. As the pilot gave her the 1 minute warning, Angel checked her gear over. Everything was packed and ready to go and tight. So as they neared the ground, Angel kicked the drop rope out of the side. This would be a fast rope drop rather than a landing. This entire region was considered hostile territory, and she couldn't afford to have the vertibird hanging around and potentially drawing attention to her. So once in position, Angel grabbed the rope and launched herself into the air, feeling it sliding through her hands and legs as she slid towards the ground, being buffeted by the downwash from the two powerful motors that kept the bird up. As she hit the ground, Angel brought her weapon up into the aim and looked around herself. The ground immediately around her was clear, and once again it was night, as the flight had taken all day to complete, which had thankfully given her time to sleep a bit en route. The vertibird pulled the fast rope back in and was quick to tilt its engines and turn before heading for home. Dark Angel to Dark Sky Actual. Comms check. Over. Angel said into her comms. This is Dark Sky Actual. Reading you loud and clear. Dark Angel. Status. Over. The comms operator replied, and this time it was a different person from before. On the ground, prepping to move out and set up base camp. Over. Angel replied. Roger that, Dark Angel. Keep us in the loop and good luck out there. Dark Sky Actual, over and out. The comms officer said, and with that the connection was closed, leaving Angel alone with her thoughts. Angel called up the map of the region. The place was huge and a lot of ground to cover in between the targets. She figured she was going to need possibly 2 camps, one for a master base that she could store the majority of her gear in, and would fall as a fallback location. And then she could possibly use her camping gear to establish a temporary FOB closer to the larger targets that were further from this base. For the master base, she was going to need a place that could easily secure and make it raid-proof so no one could really steal her shit. Looking carefully over the map, she found what she thought would be a perfect location. It was in the downtown region of the city, where there were a ton of skyscrapers. These high-rises would give her a bird's eye view of the surrounding area, while at the same time make it incredibly dangerous and tricky for anyone to reach her. Plus, the ghouls and supermutant infested streets would rather help. So once she got her bearings, Angel set off in the direction of the city of Boston. She knew she was going to have to be real careful herself in there, as this was some there was a few rather big independent human settlements, not to mention with this alliance going on, there'd probably be a good chance there'd be soldiers moving around near them too. Which, as it happened, was exactly what she saw when she came close to the place that locals called Diamond City. They were turned out to be Brotherhood soldiers, trading with the locals, and she could see their obvious power-armoured soldiers guarding a landed vertebrate as their squires and knights moved boxes to and from the city. Angel was tempted to see if she could get close enough to plant an explosive mine on the bird, so that they'd take it back to their base where she could detonate it above them and send a clearer message. But the more she thought about it, the more she felt it would probably be a better idea to remain in the shadows. Didn't exactly want them hunting her too early on. So Angel slipped silently past them and moved on to the tower she'd picked out. Now, it did seem that the tower had something of a super mutant infestation, but that was pretty par the course for the buildings around here. So, she was going to have to do some house cleaning.
"Where the fuck is it? Me no see fucking thing!"
one of the super mutants yelled to its companions as they ran from room to room, desperately searching for the figure had just sent a whole group of them sailing headfirst out of a 100-story window straight into the pavement far below them. Angel stood with her back to a wall, letting her cloaking tech do its job. She stood with a pair of suppressed pistols in each hand. They had been in her loadout for this job, so Command had obviously figured that she'd be doing a lot of close-quarters fighting. As per the usual, they'd been right. As two of the large super mutants charged past her, Angel stepped forward away from the wall, lowered her pistols to fire them into the back of the closest mutant's knees, sending it sprawling forwards with a scream as dark green blood spurted from the wounds. Before its companion could even move, Angel was already in the air, diving forward so that her pistols were near point blank when she fired it into both of its eye sockets at the same time, taking the entire back of its head clean off, before rolling out of a dive and firing a single round into the side of the screaming mutant's head, silencing it permanently. She instantly heard the thunderous footfalls of the mutant's remaining companions converging on her, so she quickly pressed herself into a gap between two bookcases and stood perfectly still. The group of about six mutants burst into the room and instantly saw their two companions dead in the middle of the floor.
"Where is it? Where it hide?"
one of the mutants yelled, and by the size of the thing, it was the one in charge. Angel stepped right into the middle of the group, letting her cloak do its work. "Right fucking here," she said before unleashing a psychokinetic energy that had been building up in her since the fight started, and 360-degree blast wave shot forth, sending the entire group flying off their feet and slamming them into the walls. Even before their bodies had finished falling to the ground, Angel was moving, twisting her body through a very practiced series of movements that allowed her to both acquire targets with both pistols and fire them accurately, which was not easy to do, as holding two guns at the same time and firing them wasn't like it was in the Holovids. It not only took incredible focus but incredible accuracy, but also being able to bend the bullets with a hit of psychokinesis didn't hurt either. Not a single one of the mutants managed to even raise themselves into a sitting position before one of Angel's bullets found its marks in their skulls. As the final one hit the ground dead, she swamply swapped out the magazines and headed for the door, leaving the bodies where they lay. They'd serve as a warning to anyone stupid enough to climb this building. As she finally reached the penthouse suite of the building, she was surprised to find that it was mostly intact, which was a rarity considering pretty much most of the other floors had been pretty heavily damaged. But this place, even still, seemed to have some of its original bulletproof windows. There was a safe room in the back, in the large back of the penthouse, and it had armoured doors which could only be locked or unlocked from the inside, or with a very special key, which thankfully she found a copy of laying on one side of one of the desks inside the large room. So, this was going to be her command centre from now on. When she'd unpacked her gear, Angel ran through her checklist, making sure a much smaller travel bag would be placed ready and packed for the mission. Her first target was a Minuteman commander by the name of Emmett Granger. As she looked over the document relating to him, complete with pictures, she couldn't help think of the chaos that this was going to sow in their ranks. Honestly, she did feel a little bit sorry for them, and kind of bad about it, really. After all, These guys weren't some old conquering hell-bent army on sweeping across the waste. They were just a bunch of farmers who wanted to protect their homes from raiders and mutants while living peacefully. Really, wasn't that what everyone wanted? Well, whatever the reason, they'd obviously chosen the wrong side in this fight. And that was her job to teach them the errors of their ways, and she was going to carry out her duties to the letter. So when she was packed up and ready to go, she took one last look at the documents. According to the brief on Sky, he was a commander of a group to the north that protected the farms of the areas. Their base of operations, to rapidly respond to the nearby settlements should they call for aid, was an abandoned factory right in the middle of them all. Thankfully, there was a picture, and by the looks of it, there were some rather nice large windows that should make sniping into it rather easy. So with that, she was off. It was a cool 5 kilometres to the target zone, so she decided to do it at a jog, deactivating her cloak to ensure that she'd have plenty of power should she really need it. Once she reached the area where the factory was located, she looked around for a suitable spot to set up. Didn't take her long to find one in the form of an old radio mast. At the very top of the mast, there was a maintenance platform where an engineer could have easy access to the small dishes mounted atop it. So with her rifle on her back, she climbed up the massive ladder right to the very top, feeling the tower swaying gently in the winds as they blew along the ground far below her. Angel took her .50 caliber rifle from her shoulder and set it up on its bipod. She checked that the magazine was secure and that there was now a round in the chamber, before she finally laid down behind it and activated her cloaking systems. Laid still like this, it would barely use any power as the suit was essentially in lurk mode, which meant she could basically lay there for days without even really using 1% of the total capacity of the power banks. Once she was set up, Angel dialed in the scope for the range, using the laser rangefinder to give her an accurate distance. She also used another tool to measure the wind speed, so she could adjust for flight time and curve of the bullet. The target was nearly 1,000 metres away, and there was a lot that could happen in that distance. Angel watched through her scope, allowing the world around her to fade away, until it became nothing more than a reticle before her eye. The sounds, sensations, feelings, everything simply faded away to nothing more than low background noise. The loudest sounds of her now were the sounds of her beating heart and her breathing, both of which needed to be controlled perfectly in order to make a shot like this. And that's when she saw him. Emmett was dressed in the standard fatigue uniform of the Minutemen. The only really thing that gave him away from the others was the fact that he tended to wear a red beret like most of the Minutemen commanders. All the other rank-and-file soldiers wore either a duster coat and cowboy hat combo, or fatigues and black berets. As she watched him, Emmett was walking around with his soldiers. Simply he was a man who was not above getting stuck into the menial jobs himself. As she watched him, he was carrying ammo crates, moving wounded men to the hospital, and even helping cleaning up blood in the surgery. He was as much of a leader as these men could ever really have hoped to have had. It was really going to be a pity to take him away from them. Angel squeezed the trigger. The rifle gave a deep growl that was muffled by the massive suppressor on the tip of it. The round flew clear of it with a belch of smoke and began its flight towards the unsuspecting man in her scope reticle, which after only a few quick beats of her heart had passed, dropped to the floor minus his head. As she watched Emmett's beret spinning through the air, Angel let out a breath that she'd been holding before pressing her comms pressel. "Dark Angel to Dark Sky Actual, come in over," she said softly. There was a brief pause and the operator came on. "Go ahead, Dark Angel, over." "Corsair is down, I repeat, Corsair is down. Over," she said. "Roger that, Dark Angel, confirming Corsair is down. Good work. Keep us apprised of your progress. Dark Sky Actual, over and out," the operator said. Even as the Minutemen soldiers were beginning to scramble out to figure out what in the name of flying fuck had just happened to their commander, Angel was already at the bottom of the tower, having taken the quick way down thanks to her collapsible grappling hook and runner line combo, which allowed her to fast rope down, before she simply pressed a button and collapsed the hook so she could retrieve it. Before they even worked out what in the name of hell happened, Angel was already halfway back to her home base. That was one down, 7 left to go. She couldn't rush this job. It was going to be a bit of a slow process, and she knew that, to minimise the risks to herself or being discovered. some part of it was going to become a waiting game. As she reached her own base, Angel couldn't help but think of the ramifications of what she'd just done. She imagined the Minutemen troops running around in a frenzy trying to locate an assassin that was no longer there, and try and figure out what in the name of hell to do without a commander. She knew that they had a chain of command, and they would eventually pick up the slack, but that would take some time. She dropped her gear into the safe room, and she sat on her bedroll. Opening up some of her rations, she began to scroll through the remainder of the documents on her other targets. As she ate, she looked primarily at the location of the list of commanders. She didn't want the Minutemen to be able to figure out where the attacks were coming from or being launched from, as she knew, despite being a militia, they were pretty far from being stupid people. It took a lot of determination and skill to not only organise but effectively run a well-organised militia. But in these times where resources were as scarce as they were, it took even more skill to pull it off. She had their respect for that. As much of the rank and file soldiers of the Enclave were taught to despise their enemies as traitors of the USA and enemies of freedom, Angel did not hate the Minutemen. They were simply farmers and simple people that had banded together to protect themselves. They were not some old conquering army hell-bent on domination. They simply wanted to live in peace and drive raiders out of their lands so that they'd be safe. This, in her opinion, was an admirable goal, really. After all, wasn't the Enclave's goal to make the country safe again, so that democracy and freedom could once again return to it under their rule? Well, that's what they had been taught since she joined the programme anyway. Now, the Brotherhood and the Free Peoples, they were a totally different matter in her mind. The Brotherhood, as far as she was concerned, were terrorists, hoarding technology they deemed to be valuable or dangerous, while making themselves more powerful by using it. They were, as far as she was concerned, enemies of democracy and freedom. As the tale went, they had once been the US military, or the remnants of it, that had survived the Great War. Well, they should have joined the Enclave and fought side by side to rebuild the great nation. Instead, they rebelled against their leaders and split off to follow their own path. So that made them traitors, plain and simple. Now, the real oddball is in this whole equation with the Free Peoples. They were a real wild card as far as Angel was concerned. They seemed to be made up of very different people and species, and from what she'd learned, but they were led by a pair of traitors to the Enclave, though she didn't really know all that much about them, only that they were really dangerous. She knew they'd been responsible for many attacks on Enclave facilities and on Enclave-controlled towns. The fact that they were not only so efficient at what they did, but had somehow managed to broker a peace treaty between all the major powers in this area were nothing short of miraculous. This was a feat that impressed Angel no end, because by all rights these groups should absolutely hate each other's guts. But somehow the Free People had simply swept in and united them all together under their banner. She couldn't help but wonder how the hell they'd have managed to achieve such a thing. What had they offered in exchange for their cooperation? Well, whatever it was, it must have been very enticing, because now they had all of the major players in the air working together. And that got Angel thinking. How easy would it be to break this union apart? She knew that the goal of the Enclave here was to break up this little alliance and have all the major players go back to fighting one another. But maybe it would be a better option if they simply took control of it instead. Surely it would be in the Enclave's best interest to simply assume control of the alliance, because with them stabilising the region, it would make it far easier to reinstate democracy. They could hold it up then as an example to the other regions of what they could have if they only let the Enclave govern them. Angel sighed heavily. She really didn't understand Command's reasoning, but then it wasn't her job to understand. It was her job to carry out orders and make people disappear, nothing more. Once again, turning back to her list, she took another bite of her rations as she selected two targets from it. She knew she couldn't take her sweet time and simply bump off one every day or so, because the Minutemen would rapidly get wise to what was going on, and they would quickly figure out that somebody was targeting their field commanders, and they would either increase the security or, worse, recall them to HQ. But getting to them would be an absolute nightmare, as apparently the place was not only crawling with Minutemen but Free Peoples and Brotherhood as well. Angel didn't think picking a fight with the Free Peoples was a wise decision right at this moment. She didn't really know enough about their tactical strengths or weaknesses to be able to formulate a plan of attack should she need to take them on. She did know, however, that they did have a wide skill set available to them, from stealth to demolition to espionage, and then they had all those royal deathclaws among their number to boot. She still wondered how in the name of hell they managed to tame those creatures without the aid of control devices. She'd heard of the Enclave experiments that had tried to achieve the same thing, and those had mixed results at best. But somehow the Free Peoples had managed to pull it off, and without any kind of constraint. Then there were the other abominations they had in their ranks, species that had no business in civilized human society. But somehow, they worked alongside these people as if it was the most natural thing in the world for them to do. Angel shook it off. She had to focus on the task in hand, two targets, and they had to stand out as perfect for tomorrow's hits. One, codenamed Rook. The other, Leviathan. Rook was a middle-aged, white-skinned woman. She had the look of a grizzled veteran about her, a lot of fierce determination in her dark eyes. A thick ponytail of dark curly hair back cascading down her shoulders from under the beret in her picture. She was in charge of the Minutemen's logistical procurement team, which was a fancy name for scavengers in Angel's approximation. According to the intel, as part of the alliance they had going on, the Avians and Brotherhood had been allowed to send out a joint team made up to look up for something underground in sight, approximately 12 kilometres from her location. Though the intel on what they were looking for was sketchy at best, though what they did know is they seemed to have found it, because Rook's team had been dispatched to pick up transport and retrieval operations on the surface nearby. Rook's real name was Ellen Williams. Then there was Leviathan. He was a black man in his mid-40s. He was in charge of the Minutemen's artillery network, and that seemed to be in the middle of expanding throughout the region. According to the intelligence reports, their goal was to create an artillery network that could hit anywhere in the entire region of Boston at a moment's notice. The point was so that troops in the field could simply call in a strike, drive out to an entrenched raider position or a settlement under attack, and call in a strike out of thin air onto their attackers before the main bulk of the Minutemen troops arrived to mop up the survivors. It was a pretty sound plan in Angel's approximation, and it would be a rather incredible asset to be in possession of. She figured that while on this job, she might actually look into how much coverage this artillery network had so far, and what kind of accuracy it could produce, as well as how they call in the strikes, as there may very well be a way for her to hijack it, and to trick the bombardiers into running it into shelling their own guys, or possibly even any other target she could designate of interest. This would have a potential twofold effect. It could cripple the trust the Minutemen had in the reliability of their own system, but also take out a target for her. Allowing her a free kill that the Minutemen would simply chalk up to an accident rather than to assign to some mysterious assassin targeting their command structure. Certainly buy her some time before they started hunting her full on. With a plan forming in her mind's eye, Angel decided to get some sleep. It was going to be a busy day tomorrow and she had a lot of ground to cover, so she was going to need to be up bright and early to start moving. So she dug down in her bedroll, and with the last few thoughts of her mission in her mind, she let sleep claim her. Her dreams were unusual, though. They felt just like when she had touched the odd crystal orb. Like she was riding along inside the head of another person, seeing through their eyes. Only this time it wasn't the person that seemed to talk to Deathclaws, but another person altogether. But oddly, they seem to be in the same place as him. And she recognises the scenery. There were happy people everywhere this person looked, and they weren't just humans either, but big alligator-like creatures wandering around, freely talking to humans. She wondered, is this one of the bases of the Free Peoples? But if so, where is it? And how can she see into it like this? Those questions went unanswered as the dream fades and leaves her with more questions than answers. She awakens to the alarm she'd set just before dawn. Angel stretched her muscles and got herself dressed before picking up a day's worth of rations and checking her gear over. Though she does, she keeps her mind keeps wandering back to her odd dreams. She can't help but wonder if there's more than that. Once shaking off those odd lingering doubts, Angel locked up her safe house and once again set off into the wastes, heading for the first target of the day.
the Rook. The terrain was pretty easy going, thanks to it mostly being urban sprawl on the way there. She walked through ghoul-infested streets with all the presence of a shadow in the midday sun. She walked right past them as if she was nothing more than a whisper in the wind. They never were aware of her presence, and never even batted a rotted eyelid at the movement among them. Soon enough, she came on what appeared to be evidence of either Minutemen or possibly the Alliance's presence. There were bodies littering the streets. Piles of them. It seemed that the Alliance troops had chewed through an army of ghouls like they were nothing more than toy soldiers in a child's game. Angel followed the trail of dead ghouls, and it very soon led her to a valley that contained exactly what she was seeking, the Minutemen's procurement camp. The Minutemen seemed to have set up their camp near the entrance to an underground railway network. They also seemed to be using some kind of refurbished towing train to bring large crates up out of the tunnels, given what they were containing as they were sealed up. It was anyone's guess. As she watched, a large vertibird clattered overhead and hovered above the camp, where it lowered a cargo net to the ground. The troops instantly began moving the crates into the net, securing them with straps and lines, until the big net was full, allowing the big vertibird to lift it into the air and airlift whatever was inside back to its base, which she guessed was the HQ that they referred to as the fort. Angel did a rough count of the troops on the ground and realised there was a rather sizeable contingent here. Moving those crates around probably took a lot of manpower, so to be fair, that did make sense. Looking around herself, she found the ideal spot to set up and observe them from. It was a rooftop of a nearby garage. It gave a good view down in and a quick escape line back into the town. Now, she did know she was going to have to bug out rather quickly after she fired this shot. Angel climbed up to the roof using a broken ladder and her grappling gear to hoist herself finally up. Once up there, she positioned herself right between a pair of broken-down old air conditioners. That gave her a decent view right down into the valley, about 500 metres away from her. It was a pretty steep shot to make, but the distance helped to negate most of the issue, though the angle was going to be a little tricky. Angel set a large rifle down on its bipod and then angled it downward so she could look through the scope down into the camp. The place was a hive of activity with troops in fatigues running around all over the shop, loading and unloading crates that were being brought up from the underground. Right at the centre of the camp was a series of large tents that was going to be where her target was located now. All she had to do now was identify them. Switching the scope over to the thermal imaging mode that was available to her, she could see right through the thick canvas of the tents and count how many people were inside each of one. Though straight away she got the feeling she'd found her woman, as among all the large shape was a single small one in the tent. If she were a betting woman, Angel would have put money on that being the Rook. Angel began to run through her breathing exercises as she kept the scope planted on the small shape in the centre tent. She kept her eye glued to the flap of the tent in the hope that someone would open it at some point and give her a glimpse inside to confirm her suspicion of the small thermal shape being her target. Eventually, after what felt like hours, it was more like minutes, a soldier comes out of the tent carrying a clipboard, and in that briefest of moments that the tent flap was lifted, Angel's suspicions were confirmed. Taking a deep, slow breath, Angel lined her crosshair up on the centre of the thermal mass. This time, given that she can't see the definition of her target, she knows she has to play it safe and go for the centre mass shot. No headshots this time, but given the size of the round, shouldn't be a problem. So with one last deep breath, Angel squeezes the trigger and the suppressed rifle coughs. Ah, so that was chapter 447, ladies and gentlemen. And it seems the Dark Angel's back in the field, and she's going to be causing misery for the Minutemen. But will they be able to stop her, or will the Alliance have to step in? Will they be able to find her before it's too late? Only going to be one way to answer those questions, and so many more. You'll have to tune in next time. So until next time, this is Ghost Nobody signing off and saying, I'll see you all next time.